Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan Sherwood Strauss, a lover, not a fighter. How's it going?
I didn't know I was either, but I just like being one of them. One out of two ain't bad. I'm doing okay.
Yeah, as long as you can be categorized as something, whether it's correct or not, that's just always a good feeling, right?
Yeah, just give me an identity. That's what I always say.
Yeah, that's the thing. We always want players to have roles and positions and all that stuff. We're the same way. We want positions in life.
Yeah, I get subbed in the third quarter, and I just love. That's what I do.
That's actually, if you just went around hugging players, I mean, that's a foul, but it would be an interesting strategy.
I mean, there are players who do that, right? You know, I think they're called enforcers.
Yeah, Reggie Evans is a hugger, for sure. Chuck Hayes seems like a hugger.
Reggie Evans is a something hugger.
How's it going? Were you in LA for these games?
I was in LA for those games.
Look at you, traveling.
I know, look at me, like a grown-up.
Traveling beat reporter.
Yeah, I'm really bad at it, because I don't know where anything is, and I just get lost, and I have my cell phone conversations when I'm in the car, but I'm in Los Angeles, and I don't know where anything is, so you can't look at I don't have a GPS, and I'm not looking at the instructions on the phone, so I've been in so many random locations over the past few days, but okay.
Don't you have an iPhone?
I do.
Why aren't you using the Google Maps app on the iPhone?
I am, but you can use the cell phone ball? You're using that?
I don't know, but I would do it. Like, if I didn't know where I was going, I wouldn't just drive into, like, Watts. Like, I would...
Well, it was fun, though. LA's so big that I got lost and I wound up in K-Town. You never know where you're going to end up.
That's true. I mean, I wouldn't categorize driving in LA as fun. But I guess it's kind of fun.
You know what the embarrassing part about this is? Is that I was staying at the JW Marriott in LA Live, so it's like, how am I even getting lost?
Yeah, where are you going, actually? You're right there. Oh, you had to go to practice, right?
Yeah, they had practice at the UCLA men's gym, so that was a little schlep.
All right, yeah. So that's a little bit of a trek.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Like, you're not driving to the arena.
And I should add that when they had shoot around at Staples, they showed up late. They showed up late, and I hit five corner threes. I've bragged on this. I've bragged about this on various mediums, but I want to brag about it further that I hit five consecutive corner threes on the floor of Staples. I will now criticize athletes up and down. I feel emboldened to do it. It's not so hard. Not so hard.
Well, yeah, it's the short three.
Oh, come on. See, that's you as the shooter going, well, I can do look, I'm just saying.
I actually don't like shooting from the corner.
Yeah, depth perception wise, it's not.
Yeah, it throws right. me. I prefer the straightaway, I prefer the wing. I'm okay. I guess I don't like the deep corner. I'm okay a couple feet up.
Yeah. I don't prefer it, but I'm sure that despite my preference, I probably shoot better there just because of the distance.
Yeah.
But I just always imagined, I'd never taken a shot on an NBA basketball court, that the rim was made of flubber and it would just reject the ball and everything was so much harder. And it turns out, no, what's harder is the flying limbs around you in an NBA game, and it's just the same rim and the same situation.
Right, the gigantic human beings who are just not built for this earth.
Yes.
Flying around.
That's the hindrance.
I've actually played basketball games on the Oracle floor.
Really?
Yeah.
Was this part of the Kohan era?
Yeah, it must have been. It was like 2004. 2003, something like that. So yes, I would imagine it was.
No, I mean, did you get minutes? Is what I'm
did I? I was actually Mark Jackson and I. Mark with a C. He and I used to have a really good two-man game when he was a Warrior. So yeah, that was part of that.
I hope you got the part of the Derek Fisher era. You know, is there any overlap there?
I don't think so. No, I think Fisher was still in L.A. Or maybe he was in Utah. He went to Golden State and then Utah, right?
That he bounced right. around. There was a time when he was almost the star of the team. That's how sad things got.
Well, he had rings.
Yeah, he was clutch.
He was a champion. Yeah. He wore a headband.
He did. Yeah. He definitely did that. He did all of those things.
Speaking of doing things, the Clippers did things to the Warriors the other night. Do you want to talk about how right Dan Wiecki and I are about this series, or did you?
Yeah.
You sent me a very rude text yesterday.
Yeah. I was very frustrated. I'm a huge Wiecki fan. I'm a huge fan of you, Zach. I'm a huge fan of you. It's not just that we're friends. I'm a fan of yours, but in this instance, I was driving around lost in LA on my way to Santa Monica listening to you guys. just driving in circles.
I think I figured it out. I think this is a ploy. This, I don't know where to go in LA. You're going to Santa Monica. You're probably going to Marina Del Rey. Like, you're going all over the place. Just as a, I'm so lost. I ended up at the beach. How did I do that?
Well, anyway, I was so frustrated because I'm philosophically opposed to you guys, and I get the perspective where you are very satisfied with basketball. We both love basketball. We completely love it. Yeah. Crazy for it. But the difference is that I get frustrated by what basketball could be in my mind, and you like what it is, and you don't want it changed. And I loved that Bill Barnwell idea of if you go up 3-0 in a series, it's a skunk, it's over. We don't need these extra games. You know, we have too many of these. We need to cut the fat. So no, I was frustrated with that.
Hold on. Aren't you always talking about getting as much revenue for the league as possible?
I'm always talking about doing that through scarcity and through whetting the appetite of the public.
Okay. Okay.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. Okay. I have no comeback for that.
It's okay. You had a ploy of accusing me of hypocrisy.
Oh God, yeah. I had a whole diatribe just waiting for
and
you.
And I was braced for it.
And I have to put it right back in my pocket.
When you went with the, don't you? Aren't you the one? I'm like, oh no, here it comes.
I tried to catch you off guard. I rudely interrupted you. I cut you off. Like I thought I had the psychological edge there.
But as far as this series is concerned, I don't disagree at all. I've been saying for a while that it should be Clips. I picked Clips in six just because it has a ring to it. If you're really interrogating me on it before the series, I might have said five. It was a Steph Curry respect pick, the six games. Because, yeah. And I don't understand why so many Warriors fans thought it would be competitive. I mean, Andrew Bogut makes $14 million for a reason. That's my whole motto on the series is Andrew Bogut makes $14 million for a reason.
And I think – well, I actually expected – I thought it would be flipped. I thought the Clippers would kill them in game one, and I thought the Warriors would win game two, split going into game five. And then I just figured the Clippers would just be so much better game five, game six, and close it out. Like, that's how I kind of envisioned the series going. But, yeah, I mean, no Andrew Bogut. If they had Andrew Bogut, I would have seriously considered Warriors in six.
Yes, I would have totally considered picking the Warriors had they had Andrew Bogut, but the downgrade from Bogut to Jermaine O'Neal is that's a thing.
I really love that moment, and Dan and I talked about that, but when he and Doc Rivers got into it, and then Doc Rivers immediately runs a post up for DeAndre Jordan of all people, just to be like, this, like, you're not good anymore. Like, oh, we can score on you with DeAndre Jordan when we want to. Like, that's how bad you are.
He's an okay backup. You just don't want to rely on him to this extent. And then you have to incorporate Spates in a way that you wouldn't want to incorporate Spates. Maybe you never want to incorporate Spates, but you have to do that. They're just in a tough spot. And they're not creating any sort of room for Curry because the guys who are left can't screen. Draymond Green is a good screener. Bogut is an awesome screener. And he just carves out so much with that wide body. The guys who are left, the front court guys, they whiff on every screen. Jermaine O'Neal whiffs on every screen. Spates whiffs on every screen.
I feel like David Lee goes to set a screen and then tries to get out of the way of the contact.
Yes, and he's one of their better screeners now.
Yeah, but that's what it's looked like. It's like, all right, Curry's going to get a screen for it. And then he's there, and then he tries to, like, he does that thing when you're walking by someone on the sidewalk and you realize, like, you're about to bump shoulders, so you try to get out of the way at the last second. That's what it looks like when he's setting a screen.
Yeah, and if you want the ball, that's what you do, right? Setting the screen is a selfless act. You're probably not going to get the ball if you set a sturdy screen. But if you slip the screen, you're going to be open. And, hey, I actually think that Lee's gotten better in some respects. He's not as bad as Spades, not as bad as Jermaine O'Neal. And I should say with O'Neal and with Lee, they've had injury concerns, so there could be a reason as to why they're evading contact. But it makes it hard on Steph Curry, especially when those traps are coming at him. There's no support, and hey, the Clippers want anybody else to beat them. It didn't work in the first game, partially because Blake Griffin played only 19 minutes. But in the next game, man, did it work! And it's gonna be interesting. Oracle will be crazy as always. It's an incredible atmosphere, but they're just not as good. They're not as good as the Clippers are. I don't see how they do it.
And even, like, as dynamic as Steph Curry can be, and maybe he'll make me look foolish tonight because he'll go off on his home floor, But as dynamic as he can be, he just doesn't impact the game the way Blake Griffin does.
They impact the game differently. Huh, that's an interesting way to put it.
I think in this matchup, without Bogut, I mean, the Clippers have people to throw at Steph Curry constantly in this game. The Warriors don't. They don't have anybody to throw at Blake Griffin. Like, not even Draymond Green, like Jermaine O'Neal. Like, however you want to match it up, they don't have that guy. And not that Bogut would have been defending him one-on-one anyway for most of the game, but the help is there.
Defending him one-on-one. In the season series, he was very effective in guarding Blake Griffin. Now, the problem is that he's going to get beat down the floor in transition, so you could work it. You could work – maybe this is too difficult to do, but you could have a situation where Draymond Green picks him up if he runs back in transition and Bogut guards him in the half court and in the post. But they don't have that option now, and they don't have anybody for him. You're exactly right. In this particular, somebody for Blake Griffin. Some other teams would. They do not. It's a problem.
Yeah, there's just not a way for them to really contain him without leaving all of those weapons open. Clearly, that was an outlier. They're not going to win by 40. Like, they're not 40 points better than this Warriors team. But, you see when Doc Rivers has a full complement of weapons that he can throw at all these people, and that's, like, the phrase I've been throwing around with this team since that Game 2 victory. But, you just need a lot. You need a lot to go at that team. And the Warriors, without Bogut, have to change things so much that they don't have that. They don't have that assortment of things that they can do.
I like the idea of Doc Rivers throwing weapons, like a ninja star. You know, I like that idea.
Ninja stars aren't cool anymore.
They're not. It's just too hard. It's too hard to throw a star like that. And we've talked on this podcast before about how movies really give you an unrealistic idea of how easily you can hurt somebody with a projectile, especially the knife. It would be way too hard to throw a knife in such a way that it flies into your opponent. But you know what weapon Doc Rivers deploys that's perhaps the most devastating of all? It's his charm. Have you ever been in a Doc Rivers presser?
I have. Oh my God. He's delightful.
Oh, it's incredible. You just want to vote for him. I've seen it before.
Just want to vote for him?
I don't know for what, but I do. You know, I'll canvass for him like a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed student out of college who's really going for a cause they believe in. That's what I wanted to do after the press conference pre-game, and it showed you a dichotomy in personality right now between Jackson and Rivers. And I defend Jackson in a lot of respects, but this is a flaw of his where he can be insecure. And so what you saw before the game two, Rivers was aw shucksing up and down going, hey, I wish I could control that. I'm not that good. Wink. Like this kind of humility that's also confidence and security. And the media is just eating out of the palm of his hand. And then you get Jackson and there's this story. Anyway,
I'm gonna edit all that out except for I'm gonna let the people know that you got a very important phone call that you brushed aside so that you could remain on the EOB pod.
Oh yeah. So Jackson, in contrast, there's this story out about how Hilton Armstrong had a strategic suggestion that helped them win Game One of having the big men flash up when Curry got trapped to be all that interior passing. That's what Iguodala said to the media, and Jackson goes off about, oh, you guys fell for that one, huh? And he just completely pushes back against that narrative almost angrily. And I'm thinking, dude, even if it's not true, and I don't know how true or untrue it is. It's probably somewhere in between because it's like a writer's room and people are making suggestions and who knows who gets credit for what. But let's say it's even not true. You can totally play this to your advantage and go, look, we take suggestions from everybody, even Hilton Armstrong. Instead, Jackson went the direction of, if we're taking suggestions from him, then we're in trouble. You know, if that's the people, we have assistant coaches. There was no reason to be so defensive and push back against it, and yet because of a lack of comparative security, it seems that he did that, and it was unfortunate.
Yeah, the juxtaposition in those two personalities is I mean, I think Jackson is a better coach even after this recent stretch of, you know, kind of shaky ground. I still think he's a better coach than people give him credit for, but he does come off as so damn insecure. Like, just so, and I don't know, maybe it's not insecure, maybe it's like an over competitiveness, but I guess that could be, you know, classified as insecurity. But there is something where it's like, no, I've got to keep puffing out my chest as I talk to you guys because I know what I'm doing. You guys don't know anything. It's like, no one's doubting. Well, no, okay, people are doubting that he knows what he's doing, but
yeah,
but no one's doubting that he has knowledge for the game, right? It's just that, hey, other people can learn stuff. You can hear stuff. Guys can think things. Like, there's plenty of room for opinions.
Yeah. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, too. I feel as though he wouldn't be in this position where people would be questioning about his job were he not so insecure. He's been sending these signals out that make the media follow up on it and try to figure out what's going on. And if he played it differently, it wouldn't create that perception. So the insecurity becomes almost self-fulfilling. And I do think that he's got all these positive qualities that he doesn't get enough credit for. And the insecurity is partially why that's happening.
What do you expect to happen in game three?
I'm kind of braced for them to lose to the Clippers, to be honest.
Yeah, I kind of think so too.
I know the crowd will be a factor, but again, it just redounds to not as good.
I know we've talked about this. Like, everyone talks about, oh, the home court advantage for Oracle and blah, blah, blah. And I don't, like, I've been there. Like, I know the crowds are crazy. And I know that, Matt, I don't think it benefits the team, though, that much. They just don't seem to be a heads over heels, or, you know, just completely that much better at home. They're good, but every team is pretty much good at home, right? Like, every good team.
They weren't that great at home this season, but I will say that in the playoffs, it gets crazy and it intimidates refs. That's the fact.
The referee, that's a good fact. I'm thinking strictly of like, oh, the other team's going to be psyched out or whatever, or it's going to pump up them. But the referee, that's a very good point.
Yeah, I don't believe that they're going to derive any special energy from the crowd. It's just that Oracle is a really old, cruddy stadium with reinforced concrete, and it's small, so much smaller than Staples is. Staples is cavernous. And that's why it seems not so loud. Oracle is small with the reinforced concrete. The noise just bounces around. And when it's angry, it's just like the noise is getting thrown and pelted at the refs.
Yeah.
Pelted. They're just getting pelted.
Oh, Say
what?
I'm looking who the refs are tonight for the game. Because it should be posted by now. God, I hope we get Ed Malloy.
We got
Ed Malloy!
Oh, we got Ed Malloy.
Ken Maurer, Eric Lewis, and Ed Malloy. Your alternate is Benny Adams. Ken Maurer and Ed Malloy. That's a tandem.
Oh man. I don't think that's a. I don't know who that's bad for.
Just the viewers.
Just the league.
Just the league. In general.
You know, I just can't stand when Tony Brothers is reffing because he's a late whistle guy. You know, I always say that. He'd be the guy in the Titanic as it's sinking going, iceberg! You know, I get very frustrated with his reffing. So I'm glad that we got him out of the way in game two. But yes, the Malloy factor will be frustrating.
Tony Brothers always, like, because of his natural, the shape of his face and his eyebrows, he just always looks confusingly angry.
Yes, he does. And Ed Malloy looks like the 1950s.
Ed Malloy looks like he's out of Pleasantville, and he looks so – talk about insecurity. He looks so unsure of himself as he makes a call that it's – I think that adds to the frustration with him. Like, whether they're good calls or not, like, you look at someone like Zach Zarba. Zach Zarba wasn't really – I don't think he was that good of a referee, at least when I paid attention to him last season. But he will just make a call very calmly, very confidently. And this year I think he's been much better. But, like, you look at – like someone like Zach Zarba, if he makes a bad call, it doesn't look nearly as bad as if Ed Malloy does.
Are we in agreement that we both kind of love Joey Crawford?
Oh my God, he's my favorite referee.
Yeah, it's a show. And see, from a Warriors perspective, you would be scared if they had Joey refing this, but you would be scared because he doesn't care about the crowd. You know,
yeah.
He's on a different trip.
Oh, he's a gladiator in the Coliseum.
Yeah. You don't want to draw that straw.
He's feeding off the blood.
Yes. You don't want any parts of that.
Yeah.
So
you're throwing lettuce heads and tomatoes at him while he's up on stage. He's turned into a salad. He doesn't get discouraged by his comedy act. Like he's turned into a nice chef salad.
Oh man, I love it. He's just such an entertainer. I just want to be entertained. That's my thing. My thing with all these replay reviews and getting it right. I don't care about getting it right. I want the call to be the call for the game to move quickly. I just want it to be an entertaining product, and all these replay reviews and, oh, Clear Path review, we got to check that out. Don't need it in my life.
Yeah, I mean, with the Clear Path, and I know we've talked about this, but like, just did it look intentional?
Well, and like, I've talked to some people in the league about this. They've got this edict, not an edict, but just this principle that it shouldn't be done by intent because you can't read somebody's mind. But at a certain point, you just got to do things by intent. When James Harden, you know, does a pump fake and jumps into somebody and flies into them in the shape of a jump shot that no sane person would ever take just because he's seeking contact, you have to at that point go, okay, that's not an intentional jump shot. I'm not calling that. But because they have this aversion to interpreting intent, they don't go that way, and I think it creates all these other problems.
Well, also, if we're doing that for Clear Path and we're saying that, like, oh, you can't read someone's mind, then how do we figure out flagrant fouls? What if a guy is just that bad at judging where he's supposed to go for the ball? Like, how do you know that?
I say this a lot. Nobody knows what a flagrant foul is. And there's just this Twitter argument all the time. And it's crazy to me how subjective it can be, where Josh McRoberts, elbows LeBron James in the throat as he's flying at him, and there's this argument of that's not a flagrant. I'm thinking, well, then what is? At what point, what's the flagrant? How does it go? What would you say, person who says it's not a flagrant, is a flagrant? And I don't like how people act as though they know and they're the holders of what a true flagrant foul is. Come on, admit it. Nobody knows. It's just totally subjective.
I do love the whole, like, oh, in the 80s, that wouldn't have been a flagrant foul. It's like, well, right, in the 80s, also, all the women in the crowd would be wearing shoulder pads right now.
I love that you went that direction. In the 80s, that would be a love tap. And
right, look, in the 80s, they couldn't dribble with their offhand either, so.
Yeah. In the 80s, Bill Laimbeer weighed as much as LeBron James does. You know, they weren't so much about the weights. It was a different thing that they were on.
Right.
And let's face it, we had grainy footage of what happened between McRoberts and LeBron last night, and they were in Pistons uniforms, then we would hold that up as an example of what the game isn't today and how it's gone soft. That was a pretty hard foul, I would say.
Yeah, that, I mean, just any time, a throat to the neck. No, that's not right. An elbow to the throat. A throat to the neck is a hard foul, though. It's also a weird foul.
Throat to the neck looks like canoodling giraffes.
Yeah, a throat to the neck is just an awkward makeout session.
It's just a nuzzling. Seems like something that Dennis Rodman would have done to Karl Malone to throw him off his game.
I actually think he did that in Game 4 of the 97 Finals. I think there was a throat-to-neck canoodling. At some
with
point.
A little bit of a butt squeeze thrown in there.
Yeah. You mentioned James Harden, who had a hilarious moment in a Houston collapse last night. I haven't watched the second half of that game yet. Yeah, not so much a post pattern as just a moseying. Like, Wes Matthews just kind of moseyed that. I mean, it's a four-point game. It's a made free throw. Dwight Howard makes a free throw. It's a four-point game. And I will say this for James Harden. He was lined up for the free throw, and Wes Matthews was not. Wes Matthews was behind the 3-point line. So at some level, someone has to say, James, get back.
Yeah.
On another level, James has to go, I'm guarding Wes Matthews. Now let me see, where did he go? It's not like where's Waldo? Like, you're not playing a where's Waldo game here. Like, Wes Matthews is he's one of five guys on the court wearing the same outfit.
Yeah.
And you have four of those guys in front of you.
Yes. It was a blown coverage. You know, he thought that he was covering the flats, like in Madden when the cornerback covers the flats like that and you get those pick sixes. He thought he was covering the flats. He didn't know that, Wes was going on a corner route or a post pattern back there, and it was just a little miscommunication.
It also looked funny that Damian Lillard, it looked like he hesitated to throw the pass because I don't think he could believe that Wes Matthews was all alone back there.
At that moment, too, it was such a collapse. The Rockets' defense has looked so bad this series, and it just punctuated all of it. It was an incredible moment. And hey, I've seen some defenses of James Harden and how he's had these great playoff moments before, and so he stinks now. You know, come on. But look, if you play like that, and if you play like that on defense in the playoffs after a season of not playing defense in the regular season, you kind of deserve to get killed a bit, right? I mean, come on.
There is, that's the thing. Like, all right, David Lee is a horrible defender, right?
Yes.
But to me, it looks like he's trying.
Yes.
Like, he's just incapable of doing it. And I'm okay with that. Like, if you look like you're trying, but you just suck at it, I'm fine with that. Like, I think that it's on the team then to game plan, and, you know, a lot of teams do that. But if it looks like you're not trying, which that's what it looks like with James Harden, and maybe he's not trying. Maybe he has just an awareness problem. You know, maybe that's the issue. But it just consistently looks like he doesn't give a damn on defense. And that's where the problem is. That's where the disconnect is.
He might have a self-awareness problem because he called a reporter a weirdo after the game.
I saw that this morning. That was great.
He's quietly developing that reputation. I always like asking and visiting media which guys are good to deal with, which guys aren't. He's kind of moving up the ranks. Darren Williams is the king. He was the guy that media guys did not like to deal with.
Right, he's awful.
Yes, he's awful.
I've never dealt with him, but I've never heard a good story. No, I have heard one good story from a guy that is kind of in with him.
Yeah. Harden's making inroads into that. He's gotten a lot of that kind of buzz this season. I don't know why either. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me why you would be that guy. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that that should taint the coverage at all. I don't, but it does, and it will. And you're just not doing yourself any favors when that's how you are, and that's how he is. And combine it with how he's just very easy to root against. He's very easy to root against with all the flopping. This whole team, I mean, I would not enjoy being a Rockets fan right now. Going down 0-2 is a problem, of course, but it's also that your team is hated. Have you noticed how much the Rockets are hated?
I mean, because people still hate Dwight, right?
Yeah, it's a combination of Dwight Howard, Harden's flopping and lack of defense, and then Pat Beverly and his crazy energy that can injure people. I love Pat Beverly too. I mean, if you talk about somebody who is really good to deal with and smart and interesting if you talk to him. His style of play, I can see why people have problems with it, but it just combines into this wad of unlikability. And then you have on the other side, the Portland Trailblazers. They've never broken anyone's heart. They've never had any success recently, and they've lost in the first round a few times. So nobody has any reason to resent them. They're new and shiny, and there's this big gulf between how the objective NBA viewer feels about the Blazers versus the Rockets.
Right. I mean, the Blazers play a much, I would say, more aesthetically pleasing brand of basketball. Lillard is very likable. Aldridge is playing so well, there's no way you couldn't like him.
Yes.
I mean, he's just destroying. Just destroying. And the fun thing is that it's been a different way both games. In the first game, he was just destroying them at the rim. Like, he had 12 made baskets at the rim. And then last night, just mid-range, just wherever he was, and it was almost exclusively on the left side of the floor, but wherever he was, he just killed them. And so when you see a guy go off like that, it's easy to fall for that guy.
Oh, yeah, he's on some Dirk level stuff right now. It was awesome to behold. And then it goes into, is he a superstar? Like, let's just enjoy this. It's awesome. We don't need to contextualize everything.
Right.
Let's just enjoy this crazy show this guy's put on where what does he have? Something like a 41 PER through two games?
I'm surprised it's that low.
41.6 PER, 0.404 win shares per 48 in these first two games. I don't know if I've even seen numbers like that before.
It's kind of a shame, too, because Dwight in the first half of that game was awesome.
Oh yeah,
he was, and that was like fun Dwight. He's catching hoops, he's dunking everything. Like, that was really fun Dwight, and it was so fun that Shaq even praised him
in a very disingenuous way.
Disingenuous way. But seeing, like, you kind of thought, like, all right, Aldridge is going well, Dwight's having a good game. Like, all right, here we go. Like, this is a big man battle, and then it kind of fell apart. It was still a good game, but it's, I don't know. It's something where this Rockets team is very hard to want to watch, which is weird because they do everything I like. Like, they have an annoying defender. They've got a good, really good big man. They shoot a lot of threes. They've got typically a very efficient score at the shooting guard. Like, it's everything you would want them to be, but it's just not working.
They're just so cynical about it, where they're trying to find the statistical advantage, so it seems there's something almost fake about it, where it doesn't feel like it's in the flow, and it's careen into the paint and try to flop into somebody, and it doesn't matter if you're open, just take the contested threes because you don't want to take the mid-range. It does seem to be going against just what we've come to regard as basketball, and you know, that doesn't mean that it's a bad thing, but it can look discordant. And I don't think this is on Dwight this series. I'm looking at his numbers. He's what, 29.5 points, 14.5 rebounds, 4 blocks per game in these first two games. I think this is more a problem of the surrounding defense and Harden just melting into the floorboards.
I haven't had a problem with Dwight or Beverly in this series. I think Parsons has played well, but I think he's also maybe more limited than we think he is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's a great ball handler. I don't think he's a great passer. He can do it. He can do it for stretches, but it's not a consistent thing. And then he's just got a very tough matchup, in whether he's going against Wes Matthews or Nicholas Batum. Those are just two very good defenders.
Yes.
And so that's a tough matchup for him. And that's the thing. It's not, the Rockets aren't bad by any means, obviously. They're very good. And it's a good brand of basketball, but there's an entertainment factor that's not clicking.
Yeah, it's not clicking. And I think what happened last night is that Harden had one of those, and I tweeted about this, the jig is up ref crews, where they were going, look, we're not falling for it, buddy.
Right.
We're not falling for it. And if he has one of those ref crews, he's in for a long night. And I think, what did he have, 2 free throws last night?
4.
And he was flying into the paint, trying to get that call. And sometimes that's the separation between good James Harden and bad James Harden, is just how the refs are calling him. And I know that fouls tend to go up in the playoffs, and the idea that they're not going to call stuff in that part of the year is wrong, but he might be the exception just because he's so well known for doing this that nobody wants to be the new Bennett Salvatore. Nobody Right. wants to be the guy who falls for the floppery in a famous way. And so I can understand them going, oh, that's James, that's what he's doing, and ignoring him the way they ignored him last night.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's an excellent point. And then, you know, the Rockets, they hit, what, they're 3 of 16 from 3-point range. Like, that's just not their game. They have to hit threes in order to win games.
Oh man, that crowd was so uncomfortable at the end. Losing Oof. The first two at home as the favorite.
Oof. Yeah, that was just and then, you know, like, you got to think they're not done, but
it's been only one team in the past 15 years that's come back from this, though, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I know it's very few.
Yeah. One team in the last 15, I think it was a Rockets-Mavericks series where it happened a long time ago.
Oh, was that maybe McGrady?
It might be. I just saw somebody tweeted it out. I didn't really look into which series it was.
I kind of think McGrady went up 2-0 against the Mavericks and then lost that series.
That would seem very McGrady-ish. I tweeted out this thing where I was looking into LeBron in the first round. Do you know that he's only had 7 total losses in the first round in his career?
Like, games?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
No, it's not. I was just thinking about how he's the anti-T-Mac, that, you know, he's been making the playoffs since the 2005-2006 season,
yeah,
and he has 7 total losses in the first round. That's taken for granted, right? We just talk about the championships and the final result, but the ability to just always cruise through the first round is no small thing.
No, yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's just huge for getting time off. It was the 2000, or at least, I don't know if this is the only team that did it, but the Mavericks went up, or the Mavericks had, they were the 4 seed against a 5 seed. They're 4 against a 5? This is a confusing layout. This is a very confusing layout. Yeah, there were 4. The Mavericks were 4 against a 5 of the Rockets, lost the first 2 at home, won the next 3, lost game 6, and then won game 7 at home.
Yeah, and I look, this could potentially happen in the series this year where it's occurred, with the Wizards and Bulls and with the Rockets and Blazers, just because they're fairly evenly matched.
But certainly.
You are in a bad spot.
You're on a bad side of history with this one.
Yeah, a really bad side of history. I'd give the Rockets more of a chance than the Bulls.
I would too, because they have players that know how to score basketball.
That was my thinking, yeah. Yes. And the whole Nene factor, where we assumed, or the collective assumed, that the Bulls were better, in part because Nene just came in and announced his presence, and that's a completely different Wizards team.
Is it Nene or is it Nene?
Nene. I think it's Nene.
Isn't Nene a dance now?
It is a dance.
It's a reality star, and it's a dance.
Some would say it's a Hilario dance. Womp, 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 womp. All right.
Let's go to Heat Bobcats, I guess. That was disgusting.
Disgusted tone of voice.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. You just sound like a sailor who doesn't want to, you know, go on another 7 months at sea, you know, eating hardtack.
Yeah.
That's the level of disgust right there.
Right.
An old-timey sailor. Yeah, moving on to...
Yeah, let's go to Heat... Well, this is some breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Kevin Pritchard, who works for the Pacers, just tweeted, Larry Bird just told me his sources say Frank Vogel's job is safe.
Aw, that's cute.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's so much better than the vote of confidence, because you're dealing with some humor. And that's good, too, because we've seen from a lot of successful teams that continuity matters, and even though there's this quick fix impulse, it doesn't work out that way, and it's better if the players know that the coach has your backing, you know. So
right.
If they mean it, then that's great. If they fire him in the offseason, then that's problematic.
Right. The Heat Bobcat series is kind of great, I feel like.
I like seeing more Bobcats on the national stage. I'm enjoying the MKG. That's fun.
It's funny because you wanted to get rid of the Bobcats for so long.
Oh, what do you mean by get rid of them?
Like literally get rid of the Bobcats. Like move them somewhere else, not have them be in Charlotte.
Yeah, I still feel that way.
but you like the roster
name.
What?
They feel that way. They're getting rid of their name. They don't even like them.
So when they go to the Hornets, you're going to be on board with them.
Probably, especially if they break out that teal. You know, I'll be on board with it.
I don't know why people have decided that teal is the thing that should come back.
It's very 90s.
It's an awful color. It attacks your eyes.
Yes, yes. It's very 1990s. It's very hard to take a teal team seriously. It's difficult. It's right. An impediment to your success, I think. I know the Marlins won, two championships. Am I right on that, Zach?
You are.
Oh, look at that.
Can you guess the years?
No.
Okay.
I only know this, too, because sometimes I listen to the Dan Le Batard show and he'll make reference to it. That's exactly how I know that.
Right, yeah.
I would have no idea otherwise.
Okay.
I know that their team name is a Marlin. But, yes, it's difficult to take you seriously when your color is teal. Very hard.
Is it weird that the Carolina Panthers don't have Carolina blue?
Yes.
In their color? Because they have teal, right?
I like the Bobcats uniforms, too. It kind of reminds me of the those Marquette uniforms in the 30 for 30. Okay. I like the look of them. But they've got an interesting cast of characters. You know, elbows to the throat aside, McRoberts is a fun player. And he's got a multitude of skills. And I like the idea of MKG kind of almost being the evolutionary Tony Allen. It would be nice if either guy could shoot better. But I'm content to just see that defense. And they're a good team. Clifford's done a great job.
He's a fantastic coach.
Yeah, he's done a fantastic job. They don't have enough to even make this a series. But I look forward to seeing what they'll become in the future.
Right, they're not. They don't have a lot of talent. But they're well coached.
Burrell Jefferson's on one foot.
Oh my God, it's like watching Joakim Noah last year in that series against the Nets, where he was just like hobbling up the court, just trying to work it out, trying to be okay. And I mean, if something ripped in his foot, like, I get it, like, you're a warrior, you're a gamer, like, you're a much tougher person than most anybody, but man, you can't, like, I guess there's no real chance of long-term damage if it's a muscle rip.
But it just seems like you guys are going to lose. You should just take the L on this.
Yeah.
And get,
but there is that element of, when he went there, he kind of took less money, I think. Like, I feel like it was a little below market value for a guy that does what he does. And he went there and he just immediately talked about changing the culture. And this is the type of move where, like, guys are going to see. I'm not saying this is going to make, you know, Carmelo want to go sign with the Bobcats, but maybe those teal uniforms will. But
I
this
don't
is,
know. That Bulls option's not looking good now.
Right. But this is the thing where, like, you look at him and it's like, this is a guy on a national stage playing through, you know, a ripped muscle in his foot, most likely. And he's still effective. Like, you kind of want to suit up with a guy like that.
Yeah. And if there's no long-term damage, then maybe that's why he's doing it. But you just have to feel awful for him.
Oh, God. It's painful. Yeah.
It's uncomfortable to watch. But yet a little bit transfixing. And I was getting yelled at by Spurs fans on Twitter until the game turned. For why are you watching that game and not the Spurs and the Mavericks? And that's a totally reasonable opinion to have. But a lot of it was just seeing Al Jefferson do the Willis Reed thing was captivating. That, and I hate watching Monte Ellis play basketball.
I'm gonna disagree with you there. That's not a reasonable thing to ask someone. Why does anybody give? I'm gonna have to bleep this out. Why does anybody give a what you're watching?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why you're missing a da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I was getting this when I was in Staples Center for the Warriors-Clippers game, too, because there was that crazy, crazy Thunder-Grizzlies game where, oh, my God, why are you tweeting about this? Because I was flown here and I'm in the stadium. What, you think I'm just supposed to cater to the thing you're personally interested in at that moment?
Yeah, like, I don't know. That's always a weird thing of, like, oh, you're missing a good game. Like, I don't know. Like, it's going to be available somewhere else. I'll see it eventually.
Yeah, I'm going to live. I think it will be okay.
And that Bobcats game was much better.
Yeah, it was a much better game. Much better. The Spurs, you know, they collapsed from what I can see. I haven't checked it out. And I didn't totally want to invest in that series. You feel differently. You love Dirk in the playoffs in any sort of variety, whereas I was very disappointed to see the Suns miss the cut and would prefer they were in against the Spurs, and I would be far more interested in that series than the one we have. But if Dallas does take a game or two coming back to Dallas, then I'll be tuned in like the bandwagon Mavericks fan I totally am now.
Certainly. Yeah, well, the Spurs-Mavericks series, like, I wanted to see Dirk in there. Like, I know people really like the Suns team, and I like the Suns team too. They're fun, but I'd rather watch Dirk. Like, we have a lot of time to watch the Suns team, and I'd rather watch Dirk right now because we don't have that much more time with him. And
you sound like my dad talking about my grandfather.
I kind of felt like I just decided I was going to put
Dirk.
I was going to have to put Dirk. I was going to have to put Dirk down. I'm going to have to put Dirk down at some point. But that's what it feels like to me, and I love watching the Spurs play. But the Spurs, I mean, Royce Young wrote this last night. Through two games, the Mavericks are just better. And I don't think they're a better team, but they're playing better. The job that Carlisle has done coaching and preparing for this, like, they've taken the Spurs out of what they do. They're not this passing, freewheeling team anymore. Last night, they had, like, 23 turnovers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, like, the defensive job has been kind of incredible. And on the flip side of that, if you'd rather watch Heat-Charlotte, like, one of those series is, you know, could be very compelling, and the other one has LeBron James in it. And sometimes you just want to watch the best player in the world.
Yeah, and hey, I didn't really expect the Mavs series to become compelling. Game one was interesting, though, with the switchy-switchy. Did they continue with that in game two? Because I haven't seen game two yet.
There was a lot of that, it almost looked like the Mavericks were playing a zone.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't. It was just the help defense was that good.
Wow, man, that's just so weird that they can be so bad at defense.
Yes, they were horrible. They're like 21st.
It's impossible to have a good defense when you have Calderon and Monte Ellis on the court at the same time with no rim protection. It's just, I just felt badly for Carlisle.
Yeah.
What are you doing to him?
He's an excellent coach.
And I just want to push back against this Monte Ellis thing. That's the reason. That's the reason I get frustrated. I just think he looks like Monte this season. I don't see the new Monte Ellis. He's better than last year, that's good, but he's not great. He still takes bad shots and just is the little kid in the soccer game who's picking flowers on defense. He's essentially James Harden, I guess. I mean, they're the exact same player defensively. And the thing is, I get why people like Monte and why he's entertaining, but there's a cumulative effect to watching him that I've endured. And yes, I say endured like I'm a martyr, watching these basketball games voluntarily. But watching every single game of his career in Golden State, I just can't. It's like having a food too much. It's hard for me to do it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, he's not the same Monte, but he's pretty close.
Like, I feel like you're getting there with Kevin Martin, by the way.
Oh, I've never liked Kevin Martin.
I know, but it's this cumulative effect of Kevin Martin is perhaps making it difficult for you to watch games he's involved in.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is that I lived in Sacramento the first 5 years of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And Kings fans really, really like locked on to like Kevin Martin's gonna be our guy, and I would watch him play and think like, just what are you watching? There's no way you think this guy is anything other than like a number four.
Well, he hit that shot. That shot was a big deal. That was against the Spurs,
it was
right?
A layup. It was a fast break layup.
It was really cool.
I guess so. I mean, they still lost the series.
It kind of felt like they had a chance just with the way Bonzi Wells going off.
Right. That, I mean, just think about what you just said. But I understand having Kevin Martin on your team, and I understand what role he does. But visually, very hard to watch.
Yeah, definitely hard to watch.
Monte's similar.
I have a cumulative Monte aversion that might not be fair. But I will be back. I will be back. Whoever might be worried about me missing Mavericks Spurs games,
I would recommend Game 3 because I think it's going to be a crazy crowd in Dallas.
Yes, yes, it will be. It'll just be a crowd of Mark Cubans. Okay, I'll get back on board with that. But it's difficult. It's difficult to watch all the playoff games and also do our jobs and definitely putting on playoff weight.
See, I've kind of just forgotten to eat.
Oh,
because I've been doing so much. So, and I'm not doing so much. I'm just doing a lot slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't been very efficient with my time. Probably because I'm not eating. And I'm actually taking weight off for the playoffs. I'm in the best shape. Not the best shape of my life. I'm not even close to that. But I'm definitely in better shape. Well,
it can only go one of two ways.
I'm in malnourished shape.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm getting.
It can only go one of two ways. Starvation or gluttony. I've gone the gluttons route. Because I was on the road.
Yeah, you were traveling.
I've seen a shape on the road. I dare you people. I dare you to try to do that.
I don't know how some beat writers do it.
I have no clue. You have to be so disciplined.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. You don't control when you eat. It's just impossible.
So
this is why players get fat.
Do you think the Bobcats can take a game?
Yeah, they can take a game. They can take a game. It's difficult now. I do think even though Jefferson is so important to them that potentially they could just steal a game from if they sit him because of the injury, just it'll be a different look and the Heat won't totally be prepared for it. I could see something like that happening. But ultimately the series is a foregone conclusion. Which is why I do favor measures to cut out some of the fat, trim the fat, the road beat writer fat from the postseason, and have fewer of these foregone conclusion situations. And I'm a hypocrite because I was saying how fun it was to see this extra shine for the Bobcats and see him on the big stage. But as so happens on this podcast, I've contradicted myself within an hour.
That's good. I want to do picks for tonight's 3 games.
Okay, let's do it.
The Pacers and the Hawks. The Pacers are -2.
Whoa. My God, the respect. The respect is evaporated.
They're going to a raucous, whatever the hell the Hawks arena is called. There will be dozens of people there ready to go.
I do wonder what that crowd's going to be like because they have this chance at a historic upset over the course of the series. I wonder if Atlanta will care. I'm going to pick the Hawks.
Wow.
I'm going to pick the Hawks. The Pacers are riding high off that last game, off that third quarter. We fixed everything. I'm going Hawks.
I went Pacers.
Okay.
I did a picks video for CBSSports.com if you want to check that out.
Oh, that's cheating. You've picked ahead of time.
Well, I guess I don't know how that's cheating.
It's cheating.
The Thunder and the Grizzlies. Thunder are -1.5.
I'm going to go Thunder.
Yeah, I went Thunder as well.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a very low-scoring game. And then, Clips-Dubs. Clippers are a 1.5-point favorite. Only 1.5. Man, that's that Oracle respect.
I hate to say Clippers. I'm going to say Clippers. I want it to be a series. I want to come back to L.A. With something on the line. But it's just – it's hard for them right now. It's hard.
Over-under is 215.
Wow.
I would take the over, personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus,
yeah,
it's just always fun to root for points.
It is fun to root for points, but it does feel as though we often overestimate the amount of points in the game because we just think that it's going to be high flying action. I'll go under. I'll go under on the points if we're picking that.
Okay. I'll go over.
Do you have any props involving Ed Malloy? Is there anything like that?
Ooh. Over under 5.5 official reviews in that game.
I'll take the under. That's a lot of official reviews.
I'm going over.
Let's follow that. Yeah. I'm excited for this.
Let's track that tonight, and you and I will talk next week, and we can follow you on Twitter at Sherwood Strauss. Thank you for the throat to neck podcast action.
Thanks for having me.